From the press of Atlantic City Newsroom, this is the Atlantic City Story Podcast, where we talk about the big stories that are shaping the city's future. I'm Buzz Keough.
I'm Christian Hetrick.
And I'm Nicholas Huba.
And this podcast is produced every week and is available every Saturday morning, but you can listen to it anytime by going to our website and clicking on www.pressofac.com/podcast. Today, we're talking about the battle between the city's police and fire unions and the state czar, who is threatening manpower cuts. Christian, bring us up to speed on this.
Sure. Well, there's two lawsuits. One has been filed by the firefighters, the other by the police union to block these cuts. And judges have temporarily halted the state from making these layoffs and these contract changes until the legal cases proceed. What the state is looking to do, they want to lay off 100 firefighters and do pay and benefit cuts that would amount to 25% less pay for the firefighters. And over on the police, police are staring at 24 layoffs with, again, contract changes amounting to about 25% less pay for the remaining officers.
And this all came to a head last Friday, I think, when the union staged a press conference in City Hall, and then they were handing out flyers. But the press conference, I think, had the most dramatic moment because Josh Lee Vidal, who was shot in the line of duty on Labor Day weekend, comes up and talks about the impact on him. Were you there for that?
I was there for that, and yeah, it was definitely kind of like the flashpoint moment of all of this. They brought Vidal up to highlight one of the specific cuts is to workman's compensation. You get 30% less than you normally would under these changes. Interestingly, once it was announced that Vidal would be speaking, Chiesa said that there would be an exception for Vidal and no cuts would affect Vidal's compensation.
I think it was a misstep and a missed opportunity by the state czar that the union seized on to realize that Josh Vidal, a hero officer, was someone who was going to be one of the injured parties in all this in terms of finances and job security.
They missed on that opportunity, but I think it underscores an issue overall with how we got to this point. You know, we're talking about salaries and wages and that stuff. But if you look back at the numbers, you go back to May of last year, and there are 418 people who are involved in the public safety department who make over $92,000. And those are salaries that are kind of based on where the city was 10 years ago and financially. And I think, you know, not taking anything away from the job they do, I think this is something that kind of has to get cleaned up if the city's going to move in the right direction.
And that's exactly what the state says. They say these are necessary cuts. Remember, the city has the $100 million annual budget gap, the $500 million in debt. And yes, as you said, those contracts, many of them were created when the city was flush with casino tax revenue, and the casino tax base just isn't what it is anymore, and that's really the issue at hand.
But this becomes a numbers thing, and in the case of the fire union, they're talking about numbers of employees, how many firefighters they want to cut.
So currently there's 225 firefighters. The state wants to bring that down to 125, but what they would do is they would reorganize the work and platoon structure, so the remaining firefighters would work 24-hour shifts to kind of make up that loss of manpower. You would have the remaining firefighters making up those manpower hours by working those 24-hour shifts.
And when you ask Jeff Chiesa what he bases this on, he says, I run this by experts, but what experts did he say?
Well, the what was cited in court was the Department of Community Affairs, one of the state monitors, Rick Ricciardella. He's a former police chief, not a fire chief, was the point that the firefighters had kind of pointed to. And interestingly enough, there was a state report, the Hansen Report, 2014, that recommended 180 firefighters, and that was done by a former fire chief. So the union, in kind of like an interesting argument, was pointing to another report that said lay off firefighters, but not as much. And so that's an interesting nuance to all of this.
In the case of the police union, is there a number they're looking to get down to?
They're looking to get down to 250 from 274, so it'd be 24 fewer full-time police officers.
One of the things, we can lay off people, but where do we adjust the pay structure? And I think that's one of the issues, you know. And I've gone back, I think we've talked about in the newsroom, I never thought this was about the police and fire. I always think this is about Christie's overall goal, which is to bring union contracts back in line.
It's a union issue.
It's a union issue.
No matter what the union, it's a union issue.
I think this goes teachers, firemen, public employees. This isn't about the city. This is about putting a stop to what he calls out-of-control union contracts.
And I think there's actually something to that. When Jeff Chiesa has come out now and done on-the-record interviews, and what you're seeing is he's actually using some of the same talking points as Christie did, the terminal leave payments, he calls them boat checks. He called the lawsuits money grabs. Those are kind of like terminologies you would picture Christie saying in a high-profile battle against the teachers union. You're definitely seeing that those same arguments.
But how are they going to get – they talked about buyouts.
Yeah.
And these buyouts to get the people at the top of the pay scale out the door to kind of push the salary structure down. And it looks like we haven't seen any of that.
I'm told the buyouts are totally off the table, in part because of the breakdown negotiations. This was something that it's in court now. They're kind of adversaries at this point. And so, the state is saying, we offered it to them. The unions kind of say, well, they offered it to us, but we're going to try and force too many of our guys to retire. So now it's totally off the table. And you're right. It could very well be the lower scaled people who are going to get laid off.
Now, why is it off the table? Is because the city doesn't have the money to pay for it? Because if I remember correctly, one of the things that was talked about during this whole process was this buyout, but the state wasn't getting involved financially in it and laying it all on the aspect of the city, which, let's be honest, the city has no money. I mean, how are they going to buy out guys who are making $95,000 more than that a year?
Yeah, Mayor Don Guardian said that. I mean, that's kind of one of the fun, not really fun, but maybe frustrating things about covering this. It's like alternative facts, right? You're right. The state says it's because the unions wouldn't negotiate, and so that's why it's off the table. But to your point, Mayor Guardian had a totally different story, and it was, we're broke. We can't afford the buyouts unless the state helps us.
Well, one of the things any union will say in public safety when there's cuts is public safety, and that's what some of the officers did after the rally was to go out on the boardwalk and hand out flyers and say your public safety, don't be cheap on public safety. But when you look at the actual numbers in the last decade, Atlantic City's had a downward trend in the last 10 years in terms of violent crime. Now that might have spiked last year in terms of robberies and assaults, but overall, over 10 years, the trend has been that the city is becoming increasingly safer. Is that work against the union? Or can they say, well, that's because we had the staffing? How does that play?
I think that's a very – the union will push this point because they've invested – let's be honest, the city's invested in them to a large degree of their budget. And I think the unions will basically go, look, it's worked. We've cut down a violent crime. We haven't done this now. But if you cut from us, you take away these positions – maybe you have a situation where that number starts to spike and public safety is at risk, and that's going to be their way of spinning the whole thing.
So you're saying salaries may be an issue, but manpower, you don't necessarily mess with it if that's the formula that's worked.
Yeah, if the numbers say it's worked. And the salary structure, I think, is a totally different thing.
And similar to the firefighters, the plan for the police making up the lack of manpower for the state, the officers will work 12-hour shifts up from 10 hours. And so the same idea that, yes, we'd have fewer officers, but each officer would be working longer, that, and of course, has its own public safety argument in that, do you want an officer responding who's in his 11th hour on the job?
What is the model for that? Is there a model that they point to?
Sure. No, it slips my mind at this moment, but I have looked. There are other municipalities across the country who have done both the 24-hour model for the firefighters and the 12-hour for police. So it's not something that is entirely uncommon, but obviously right now they don't work those shifts.
Do you think this whole thing, these court cases, is delaying the inevitable? Like, we're going to get to a point where it's going to be – they're going to cut salaries. They're going to cut jobs. They're going to cut this. And even if they went to a – they got it to the state Supreme Court – based on their pension ruling of a couple months ago, where they basically said, if you don't have the money, you can't do it. Do you think we're in that same kind of case?
Mendez's ruling, I finally got a chance to read through the whole thing. It's very interesting. He ruled on two things, but one of them was, can you win this case, right? Like the likelihood of success. He said the firefighters union had very little likelihood of success in this case. And so that, I think, is an indicator that it's an uphill battle for the unions.
What happens next?
There's a 20-day stay on the firefighters' suit, so that's going to eventually expire. We're going to get an appeals court ruling there, and the police have their first day in court next month in April.
I think what really happens is attorneys make a lot of money off this case, too, like Jeff Chiesa and all these guys.
And we'll find out about those billings in the near future.
Yes, we will. You've been listening to the Atlantic City Story. You can find the Atlantic City Story as well as other podcasts on sports and culture at www.pressofac.com/podcast. Welcome back to the Atlantic City Story podcast. Not surprisingly, the conversation between the public safety unions and Jeff Chiesa has turned not just to jobs, but to public safety in the city. Joining us now is Hannah Schweder, a reporter with the Press of Atlantic City, who recently wrote about the impact of violence on families living in Atlantic City. Hannah, what made you want to explore this issue?
Well, it was a little bit outside of my realm of features, what I normally do, but being one of the few Atlantic City residents in the office, it's something that I see an increase in crime in the inlet just in the last few months. And it's just something that we're getting a little bit more concerned about, especially considering possibility of less police and things like that. So I just wanted to come at it from that perspective of living in the city and coming home later at night to that area. And it's something I felt that I could connect with people on. So
a lot of times these conversations kind of happen at an intellectual level. Public safety, you know, the police are saying these threats will increase, or if we can't protect you, you're seeing it a little more on a visceral level, and you're talking to people in your story who have lost loved ones to violence.
Right. It's definitely not wasn't an easy conversation to have. I think these were interviews that I likely won't forget. You can't imagine anything worse than a violent crime taking away your child. So it's something that's not easy, but this is increasing all the time. And so far there's been, like I said, two fatal shootings very near where I live. And it's something that other parents maybe can't quite relate to until you're unfortunately in that pool of people that this happens to. And it's something that we need to start looking at, the way that the heroin epidemic is being looked at, and if there's safety concerns and safe houses, things we need to be doing, then that's what I think it's time to start looking into that.
Well, you mentioned the heroin epidemic that's happening everywhere, not just, I mean, it is happening everywhere, literally. One of the things that struck me about your story and the people you interviewed was they all suffered loss, but they didn't suffer it quietly. Many of them reached out, formed groups, formed connections, tried to help other people. Do you think that's part of the process of sometimes of healing and helping others is that helps themselves?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, we mainly worked with Kelly Kors, who is starting a nonprofit that is ramping up now this year to look at the different ways to help these families. And the reality is, when something happens, you can't just move farther out of South Jersey when something like this happens. So you have to find a way to exist and go to the same grocery store and walk the same streets at night after this has happened to your child. So I think the best thing to do is that families are finding that there is this pool of people that are, you know, suffering from the same things they are and trying to help each other. So that's a group like this, that's what's needed, because, you know, unfortunately, like I said, nobody knows what that's like until it happens to you, but it is happening to a growing number of parents. So
one of my observations in covering Atlantic City is how tight-knit of a community is. Everybody seems to know everybody. And whenever, in the few rare instances where I've had to cover these shootings, the one on Black Friday, I go to the victim's home, and Council President Marty Small's there. Marty Small knows the victim and his family, and a lot of the city council meetings, too. There's always, unfortunately, a resolution of recognition for someone who has lost a life due to violence. And so that's just why I think in Atlantic City, it's perhaps a bit more unique issue than other urban areas, because it's only like a population of like 39,000 residents, and everybody seems to know everybody.
Right. And this is a small island and small blocks that possibly the perpetrators are still out there. Often there's few arrests right away in these cases, so you're walking around with that fear as well on top of everything else. So, and in, like you said, you know everybody. So
I was wondering, as a person who doesn't live in Atlantic City, is there a concern about potential cuts to public safety? Has it been talked about, like in your building or other places publicly?
I think for the most part, that's a little bit more of a concern now. Of course, that some of these shootings have been closer to home, especially for my building, the surrounding buildings, in an area that didn't used to see these things quite as much in the last few decades. So the thing is, I think longtime residents are, it's sort of like they just don't count their chickens before they hatch. Until a little bit more happens, I think they're holding off worrying too much. But
I'm just curious, in your reporting, what was the most surprising thing that you came upon in talking to the survivors and the families of the victims?
I think overall that they have to carry on, and they do that namely because they have other teenagers who are suffering in class and school. They have to go back to their lives and have the typical teenage issues that they would have, but they're really the strength of, I can't imagine what it takes to go back to being mom and being caretaker and fathers too, of course, to continue on working and, you know, getting your kids from school and making sure they're okay. It takes a lot of strength, and if people can get through that, I think that just shows what the community is dealing with.
Thank you, Hannah. You've been listening to the Atlantic City Story. You can find more stories on Atlantic City and the region in our daily editions of the press. But to find more podcasts about Atlantic City, sports, or culture, go to www.pressofac.com/podcast.